Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. All kinds of votes across the country yesterday. Three elections grabbing big party players hard in Virginia and New Jersey. Republicans will be governor, and Democrats savor defeat and its implications for the Obama agenda. In New York's 23rd, the Tea Party conservative candidate of Sarah Palin and the Angry Right is defeated in a district that has elected Republicans since Ulysses S. Grant was in the White House. This hour, On Point, a shot across the bows on Election Day. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Are Republicans bouncing back or getting ready to melt down in their own internal civil war? Democrats, where's the Obama effect? Is this it? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In Trenton, New Jersey last night, Governor-elect Chris Christie told supporters that had helped him win over in Governor John Corzine.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, New Jersey, we did it.
The Democrat out after one term, the Republican in Richmond, Virginia last night. GOP Governor-elect Bob McDonnell pledged that his team would improve life for the people of Virginia.
I pledge to you over the next 4 years, action and results. I'm reminded of the old adage of the Boy Scouts that I will bring to Virginia, and that is working together with Ken and Bill and you and the great leadership team that we will leave Virginia better than we found it.
And up along the Canadian border in the state of New York, Democratic Congressman-elect Bill Owens won a special election there, told voters that they're sending a clear message to Washington. Here he is in Plattsburgh last night.
When it comes to getting our economy moving again, to creating good-paying jobs for our workers, to ending tax breaks for companies that send jobs overseas, and for making upstate New York a leader in producing clean energy, they put aside partisanship and declared they're ready to move forward.
Bill Owens, not the Republican, not the conservative candidate there in upstate New York. Joining me now from Washington is Charles Mathesian, national politics editor at Politico. Charlie, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Give us some numbers. What are the margins that matter? What do they mean?
Well, I think the real margins that matter are these, and you find them in the exit polls. The most striking feature, I think, of last night is less that Republicans won in New Jersey and Virginia, but the way they won. If you take a look at the exit polls, both Chris Christie and Bob McDonnell, the Republican nominees, carried independents by roughly 25 points, and that's a pretty stark figure and one that's going to worry a lot of Democrats today, because keep in mind that Barack Obama won 51-47 over John McCain in 2008 among independents, and the independents are the ones that are putting the Democrats in the majority, so there's going to be a lot of folks looking at those numbers with furrowed brows.
There's also a lot of attention to the Obama factor in the exit polls, people saying whether or not Obama mattered in their vote. How do you interpret those, Charlie?
Well, I think the White House can't avoid getting dinged on this. It's interesting the way they were positioning themselves yesterday, as if they weren't paying that close attention. And the White House said that the president wasn't even watching election returns. If you take a look at the exit polls, they say that for a majority of voters in both Virginia and New Jersey said President Obama was not a factor in their voting. But on the other hand, when you're the president and when you have an ambitious agenda and you lose two very big profile races where to varying degree you had some level of involvement, you can't avoid getting some of the blame. And certainly going forward, that's going to be on the mind of a lot of folks who the White House is going to rely on for some tough votes.
So there's spillover here. We'll talk about the implications for Democrats and Blue Dog Democrats, but these are state elections. They're local elections. How do you interpret what happened in Virginia?
Well, Virginia is, I think, the most interesting of the results, largely because this was widely seen as a model of the new Obama map, that it was a so-called purple state, and we know that it's been transitioning to the Democratic Party for some time now, and you see that, you know, in state legislative races, you saw it at the statewide level, but all of a sudden that came to a halt, and it wasn't just by a small margin. I mean, these were near blowout margins, and it wasn't just the governor's race in Virginia. Republicans picked up some state house seats, And more important, they swept all three statewide offices by very big margins. And so that is, I think, the most stark number of the day.
People say it always happens in Virginia. Go back a couple of decades, and you're going to see this sort of heading toward the midterm year when Virginia votes in this odd year. They always push back against the president in power.
That's exactly true, and oftentimes, though, that reveals something about the contours of the next year's election landscape. Not always, but sometimes it does, and I think that's what some folks are looking at. And they're also looking at what this means for how we were viewing the election map. Does it mean that all purple states now are maybe transitioning at a less rapid rate towards the Democratic Party, or are they less enamored of President Obama? And I think that's sort of the debate that we're going to have now in the wake of these numbers.
Obama's team worked very hard in New Jersey, put some of their top political operatives in there. The president himself was there three times. Still, Corzine's out. How do you interpret it?
Well, I think that's a good point to make, because there was a distinct difference in the way the White House treated these two races. They did not embrace Cray Deeds in Virginia in the same way that they embraced John Corzine. That's partly Cray Deeds' own fault, because he put a little distance between the president. But I think what's interesting about the Corzine race is that the White House put a lot of skin into that race, and I think what you'll see, though, what they will say, and I think with some reason, is that John Corzine was a very troubled incumbent in the sense that his numbers, his unfavorables, were very, very high. I mean, that was almost a suicide mission to begin with, because he is a governor who was so unpopular that he never broke 45% in the polls all year. So he was sort of limited, and the only way he could win was to run a pretty negative campaign to drag down his Republican opponent and make him less viable than him. So, you know, that was a real big uphill race to begin with. So I don't know how much of that you can really lay at the feet of the White House.
Still, they tried. And in upstate New York, it got everybody's attention when, of course, the Obama administration named the incumbent there, Republican, Secretary of the Army, meant a special election would be up on the rails. The designated Republican got dissed by an awful lot of very big on the right side of the Republicans' internal struggle players, Sarah Palin, right on through. But not even a Republican. Conservative Party Douglas Hoffman has lost. Bill Owens, the Democrat, has won. What does this mean for the GOP's, a big conversation, to put it politely, inside their tent, Charlie?
You know, Tom, it's really hard to know what to make of New York 23, and here's why I say that. If you take a look at what's happened over the last month in that special election, this Conservative Party candidate, Doug Hoffman, the third-party candidate, came roaring back in the polls in just 30 days' time to take a lead, and a pretty big lead, on the eve of the election. Yet, ultimately, he lost that race, giving the Democrats a consolation prize last night. So, on the one hand, that is a significant win that shouldn't be overlooked by the Democrats. On the other hand, though, while it was a very nationalized election in the sense that we were all watching this small rural district in Washington and everywhere else for clues, you know, it was still determined in the end on a very regionalized basis, in the sense that Hoffman lost because he could not win enough of the Republican supporters, the Republican who dropped out of the race on election eve. Mm-hmm. And you could tell there was a lot of bad blood there, because he ran very poorly in her part of the district, and the Democrat ran very well in his part of the district. So, you know, it was decided, at least, on a very localized basis. And, you know, the one takeaway that I have from that race is that, you know, it makes you wonder whether this much talked about conservative grassroots activist movement, along with Tea Party activists, you have to wonder whether they're a paper tiger or not, because this was their candidate, and people rallied from around the country around this candidate, Doug Hoffman, yet in the end, he couldn't even pull off this race despite all that momentum and national involvement.
With Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Dick Armey, Tim Pawlenty, right on down that long list. Charles Matheson, Matessian, at the Politico, it's great to have you with us today. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Joining me now from Washington is Ross Douthat, op-ed columnist for the New York Times, co-author of Grand New Party. Ross Douthat, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me back, Tom.
And from the Radio Foundation in New York, we're joined by Thomas Edsel, political editor at the Huffington Post, professor of journalism at Columbia University, author of Building Red America. Thomas Edsel, welcome back to you as well.
Good to be with you, Tom.
So, Ross, we'll look at all of this, but take us to that New York 23rd first. Civil war still on in the Republican Party? Kind of schism here? Does this mean Sarah Palin's crew strikes its flag and joins the mainstream?
Well, I think one comparison you might make is between what happened in New York 23 and what happened with Howard Dean's campaign in Iowa in 2004. Dean, I think, represented within the Democratic Party something similar to what Hoffman represented within the conservative movement, which is a sort of unapologetic, take no prisoners. Mm. You know, Dean's famous line was, I represent the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, and we're not going to compromise at all with George W. Bush. And similarly, Hoffman was sort of a standard bearer for an awful lot of people who want the GOP to be basically just a straightforward oppositional party that says no to everything that Barack Obama wants to do. But what happened, I think, was similar to what happened with Dean in Iowa, where you had this tremendous national energy focused on a very particular local regional race. And I think that in the same way that, you know, in a way, Dean flooded Iowa with, you know, bright-eyed liberal activists from all around the country who went around knocking on doors and so on. And then he lost that state by a lot more than people expected him to. And I think you could see a kind of local backlash probably against the nationalization of a race. People, just as people in Iowa said, hey, mm-hmm. wait a minute, we're not sure we're on this Howard Dean national bandwagon. I think a lot of people in upstate New York may have said, well, you know, it's great that Fred Thompson and Tim Pawlenty and so on are all want to talk about our district, but, you know, it's our district.
Right. Tom Edsel, we just got half a minute here. We'll come back and get in deeper, but you've looked on from the left at this situation on the right. Do you think this means a retreat by the sort of Sarah Palin crowd, the Tea Party crowd?
No.
Or just dig in harder?
I tend to disagree with Ross. I think the Club for Growth and the other allies, they drew blood this time. That what they didn't do was to get into the Republican. There was no Republican primary. If they had, they probably would have won that. And if Hoffman had been the Republican nominee, he would have done much better.
Tom, I hope we'll come back and look at it in full after a short break here. Tom Edsel, Ross Douthat, we're so glad to have you with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about a shot across the bow election day for Republicans and Democrats, with GOP victories, a key conservative loss, and a warning for the party of Obama. Tom Edsel's with us, political editor at the Huffington Post, author of Building Red America. Ross Douthat is here from Washington, op-ed columnist at the New York Times, co-author of Grand New Party. Tom Edsel had to go to the break there, but give us your sort of relative, you know, win-loss ratios here today. Republicans took some big seats, governors, state houses. On the other hand, they got their problem in the 23rd in New York. Democrats took some losses, but they're looking at this maybe schism in the GOP. What's the balance, Tom?
It was a win for the Republicans. The two big states they took control of, one of them a key swing state now and one of them a supposedly blue state. And on top of that, the New Jersey exit poll showed real weakness among older voters, which may be as a result of the debate over the health care bill.
Weakness for Obama, for the Democrats, I should say.
I mean, the Democrats, the Corzine did much worse among voters over 65 than any other group. That does not bode well for the party, nor does it bode well for the prospects for a public option on the health care bill. That's going to be a little more problematic for both Pelosi and Harry Reid winning support for that now that these election results are in.
Ross Douthat, what about with the GOP in Washington? Do they dig in even harder against Obama? I don't know if you can dig in any harder than...
I don't think you can dig in that much harder. But I think that a lot of Republicans in Washington would look at these elections as at least partial vindication of a strategy of opposition. They would say, you know, you were talking about it with Charlie Mattesian before, but they would say a state like Virginia, a purple state, a state that was trending Democratic, all the demographics seem to be moving in a more liberal direction. It didn't just go for a Republican. It went for a Republican by an enormous margin. And similarly, in New Jersey, a state that's been a blue state for a very long time went for Chris Christie, not by a huge margin, but also not by, you know, half a percentage point. So I think Republicans will look at those results and say, we're going to fight even harder. And I think the real question is, how do swing state Democrats react in the Senate, but especially in the House of Representatives, where I think that everybody's up for re-election in a year's time, And you're going to have a lot of Democrats, I think, in swing districts who are feeling a little more nervous today about a vote for health care reform than they were feeling a week ago.
Looking over their shoulder, we'll look at what fighting harder means for Republicans, given that loss on the kind of hard right in the 23rd. Let's hear from the 23rd right now. We've got Brad calling in from Canton, New York. I think that's right up there in New York's 23rd. Hi, Brad. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom and Charlie. Yes, we're right on the border, and all of politics is local. The problem is that the fringe missed it. They thought this was a bunch of national issues, and they focused on social issues. And the candidate who lost it to Owens forgot about this is one of the four poorest counties in the state. We're the largest congressional district close to being the largest in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
We've got four colleges. We don't have a four-lane highway. We've got Fort Drum, St. Lawrence Seaway, and Mr. Hoffman missed all the discussion about jobs and all the local issues, and he brought in all these big-name people. And the exit interviews by the Courier-Observer yesterday, Laura Baumier, and by NCPR, North mm-hmm. Country Public Radio, said that they don't want all these negative things, and we're much more practical.
Brad, let me ask you about the woman who was put up by the Republican Party, dropped out in the end under this withering attack from the far right. Didi Skozafava supported gay rights, abortion rights, embraced the federal stimulus package, ended up out, and I'm not, you know, she's got her own reasons, but ended up endorsing the Democratic candidate. What did you think? What did your neighbors think about the way she was treated by Republican bigwigs here?
They thought that the Republicans gave her the shaft. They thought that the national commentators missed all the points up here.
Mm-hmm.
They missed the point that this was a local election on local issues, because we've got almost 10% jobless. We lost Alcoa and General Motors up in Messina. As I say, we need stimulus, we need jobs. We've got four colleges here. The largest employer is the New York State Department of Correctional Services. The largest business is dairy farming. It's going to hell in a handbasket.
Right, and prisons and Fort Drum, not enough. Brad, it's good to hear from you. Let me get one more right here from East Moline, Illinois. Mark, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Yes.
Very interesting thing happened to me about a month ago. I was ruminating on the Republican-Democrat debacle, and especially the Republicans. So I've been a conservative most of my life, and I've attempted to, you know, take things as they come. However, I called the Rock Island County Republican committee, and the phone was not answered after 13 rings, and an answering machine said, "We are not taking calls."
Nobody home.
So I thought, well, that's very interesting. And then right across the river, the Mississippi I'm talking about, Scott County is a pretty influential county in Iowa, and I called their number, the Republican county number, and it was totally off. And so I thought, well, what the heck? I'll call Iowa's Republican committee, and they had no phone either.
So we're getting the picture. You couldn't raise the party when you wanted to talk to them. Let us look at the GOP post this vote. Rust out that, you say, a Howard Dean moment, maybe, in New York's 23rd. But nationally, you've got these battle lines laid out. Newt Gingrich on one side saying, let's be careful not to isolate ourselves in absolutism and purism and, you know, be pure and small forever. Dick Armey saying, let's be, you know, fierce and true to our deep conservative principles. How does that affect the actual organization of the GOP? Are there going to be fights over who runs across the country between Tea Party folks and the rest, Ross?
There are going to be some fights, I think, in the same way that you've seen some fights in the Democratic primaries mm-hmm. in 2004 and 2006 between sort of more – I mean, the Ned Lamont, Joe Lieberman race in Connecticut is the most famous example, but you had more obscure examples across the country too. I do think, though, that it's quite possible that the Republicans will find a way to paper over this divide in much the same way that the Democrats did in 2006 and 2008, so that the energy of Howard Dean supporters, for instance, which for a while seemed like it was going to split the Democratic Party, ended up being channeled into Barack Obama's, you know, sort of self-consciously post-partisan, transcending all divides campaign. And I think a lot of Republicans are going to look at Virginia, especially in the kind of campaign Bob McDonnell ran, as a great way to try and bridge that divide. Bob McDonnell is clearly, you know, a down-the-line conservative, socially conservative, fiscally conservative, and so on. But he ran a campaign that was very focused on issues of transportation, jobs, and so on.
Downplayed his social conservatism in this one.
Sorry?
Downplay that social conservatism.
He downplayed it. Well, he had to downplay it because Credide spent the entire campaign attacking very socially conservative thesis that mm-hmm. McDonnell had written 20 years before. But he didn't, you know, he didn't change his position on any mm-hmm. on any social issues. And he did a lot of outreach to minority communities, especially not just Hispanics, but especially in Northern Virginia to South Asian, Southeast Asian, East Asian communities that have been trending Democratic. And so I think that if you're a Republican strategist, certainly looking at ways to run in the next couple of years, you're going to look at Bob McDonnell and say, this is a campaign that succeeded in sort of bridging the divide within the party.
Tom Edsel, how do you see it? Republicans will paper this over, transcend it, or descend into more, you know, internecine fighting here?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. This is a fight that actually has a long, long, long history going back to 1964, mm-hmm. At least. And it has been a part of the character of the Republican Party to be having this struggle between its moderate wing and centrist wing. The difference between in the Virginia race, the Republican didn't paper over those issues. He passed all the litmus test questions for the Republican primary electorate, so he could campaign on other issues. In New York 23, the woman did not pass those tests, and she was basically she would have run terribly had she stayed in the race. The question is, can the Republican Party deal with a candidate who is, say, pro-immigration? Can the Republican Party conceivably accept a candidate who has a moderate stance on abortion? Those are big problems for the Republican Party still. But I think this election in New York 23 does represent the victory of the conservative wing over the moderate wing, and that's going to keep on playing out. It's going to play
even
out
even though
in the
their
Florida
candidate
election.
Finally lost. Even though Hoffman finally lost, you still
see? I mean he ran as the conservative mm-hmm. candidate, mm-hmm. but he did force her out of the race. Now the same thing is going on right now in Florida for the U.S. Senate nomination, where Christie, the governor, was the favored candidate, but he's in increasing trouble from a conservative challenger from the right. Mm-hmm. Very similar, but this is within the party. If Rubio, the conservative, mm-hmm. wins there, that's going to be a real big win for the conservative wing. And I think you're going to see much more effort put in there because it is a within-party contest, not a strange one like New York 23 had.
Head on a pike in the 23rd, but a Democrat win in the end. Let's think about Democrats. Roseland, Virginia. Al, you're on the air. Al, what'd you see?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I worked the polls. I've worked the polls for 6 years now, and I talked with I know who the independents are, who the Democrats are, and who the Republicans, and I talked to a lot of people yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some conversation I heard that I haven't yet heard anybody on the media talk about. And that is a lot of the independents and Democrats yesterday were upset with the Democrats that they sent to Washington last year that haven't got health care pushed through. They felt that the conversation was the starting point of the conversation was put on by the Republicans to start at the public option when it should have started at mm-hmm. single payer, should start at single payer and work towards the public option. And they allowed the Republicans to set the agenda on what was going to be talked about in health care. And they felt that if they're not going to do what we elect them to do, then why are we electing them?
There's a polling station front report from Al in Virginia. Tom Edsel, how about it? Maybe this is not a call to Blue Dog moderation, but a call to, you know, fire up the Democrat base with really working hard on the kind of full Monty here. Bring on the whole program.
The caller may be correct. I think where he is absolutely correct is that Obama wanted to get this bill passed a long time ago, and the delay did certainly hurt the Democratic Party. A big win would have been on health care, would have worked to the advantage of Democrats in this election. and bolstered the image of Obama and the party as able to do something that it had promised to do, whether or not people are entirely supportive even, but it still would have been a win. And strategically, I personally tend to agree with the caller that you're better starting strong and bargaining away from a position of strength rather than starting in the middle and bargaining away, pushing yourself into a weaker and weaker position. But that's another matter.
Al in Roseland, Virginia, thanks for your call. Let's go to Bowling Green, Kentucky. Andrew, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You know, I would say I think that Republicans and Democrats, for both, there is a lesson here, but they'll take the wrong lesson, each party. That is, the lesson for Democrats, I would agree with the previous caller or one of the previous callers, that is, the lesson here is you were elected to do a job, and that is to pass health care, to introduce climate reform, climate change reform, things like that. And if you don't do the job for which you're elected, voters are going to take that out on you. But the lesson that Democrats will take is run to the center. And that's unfortunate because that seems to be what Democrats do. The lesson that the Republicans should learn here is ignore the far right base, that they aren't productive. Unfortunately, the lesson that they will learn, or fortunately if you're a Democrat, the lesson that the Republicans will learn is run to the right and start in with these far right candidates in the primaries and start primarying people just like the Democrats have done for the last couple of cycles. Hit them in the primaries and take them out there. So I think both parties are going to have a problem here if they don't learn the lessons that this election seems to be telegraphing.
Wrong lessons on both sides. You fear, Andrew, in Bowling Green. Ross, doubt that? How about it? Democrats going to learn, take away the lesson, run to the center, and GOP run to the right, the far right?
Well, I mean, I think that it's tricky because there are two things going on here, right? I think both callers are right that part of what happened in this election, part of what may happen in 2010 is you have a lot of voters who are liberal voters, maybe were first-time voters for Obama, young voters, minority voters, and so on, people who got really excited about the promise of Obama, who are feeling a little bit more disillusioned now about the realities of governance and so on. And those people aren't out voting for Republican candidates, but they may be staying home. So in a sense, yes, if the Democratic Party doesn't pass health care reform, they're going to have a turnout problem. They're going to have trouble turning out their base. At the same time, though, you know, it's not unreasonable to take the lesson from these elections if you're a Democrat that you should run to the center. I mean, if you look at national polling on healthcare reform it doesn't poll majority support. You can get majority support for specific features like the public option that liberals support, but if you poll healthcare reform as a whole, right now it's like 42% in favor, 52% against, depending on which poll you look at. So if you're a Democrat in a swing state, you look at numbers like that and you're going to think to yourself, well, I've got to be careful how far to the left I go.
We're going to come back and look at exactly what's unfolded and unfolding in these elections and on the horizon for 2010. Sarah Palin, a big player in the 23rd, though her candidate, the Conservative Party's Douglas Hoffman, did not win. She endorsed him on Facebook. She's out on Facebook. Sarah Palin again today, the former governor of Alaska. Here's her word. Palin writes on Facebook, "The race for New York's 23rd district is not over, just postponed until 2010. To the tireless grassroots patriots who worked so hard in that race and to future citizen candidates like Doug, please remember Reagan's words," writes Sarah Palin, "of encouragement after his defeat in 1976. The cause goes on. The cause goes on." So Sarah Palin staying in, saying more of this. It didn't work there in 2010. Ross, doubt that. Please stand by. Thomas Edsel, it's great to have both of you with us. When we come back, Mickey Edwards joins us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about a shot across the bow election day for Republicans and Democrats with GOP victories, a key conservative loss, and a warning for the party of Obama yesterday. Ross Douthat joins us from Washington, op-ed columnist for the New York Times, author of Grand New Party. Thomas Edsel, political editor at the Huffington Post, is with us, author of Building Red America. And right now from New Jersey, Mickey Edwards is here. Former Republican congressman, served Oklahoma's 5th congressional district from 77 to 93, was a member of House Republican leadership in those years. He is author of Reclaiming Conservatism, How a Great American Political Movement Got Lost and How It Can Find Its Way Back. Mickey Edwards, welcome back to On Point. What do you see in the results yesterday, Mickey?
Well, you know, first of all, in New Jersey and in Virginia, those were big victories for the Republican Party, especially in Virginia. In New Jersey, it was a lot to do with Corzine's unpopularity, but the Virginia results were pretty powerful. You know, and I've been listening to the conversation, mm-hmm. and in terms of New York 23, go back to what Tom Edsel said before. This was a pretty good victory, I think, for the conservatives. Here was Hoffman running as a third-party candidate with the Republican candidate coming out against him, and he almost won. And, it probably, if he had been the person selected in the first place by the Republican leadership up there, you know, he might have won that election. So, you know, it's really hard to read this as a repudiation of conservative, well, you know, whether they should have been repudiated or not's a different question, but I don't think you can look at the results and say that the conservatives really took it on the chin in that one.
But what does it mean for 2010, Nikki? Does it mean more civil war in the GOP? You've got Richard Viguerie saying, you know, it's time to lock and load and go to war with these establishment Republicans.
As has already been pointed out, there's a long history here. I happen to be in New Jersey right now to give a speech, in New Jersey, Senator Clifford Case, a liberal Republican senator from New Jersey, was defeated by Jeff Bell, a conservative. In New York, Jim Buckley was elected to the Senate as a conservative. You know, so this has been going on for a long time, these battles between the wings of the Republican Party. But, you know, right now, you have to say, even if you looked at Didi Scozzafava, maybe if she had departed from the common line of the party on one or two issues, you know, there might not have been this. You know, it was that she seemed on so many of the issues right down the line to be more like a Democrat than a Republican. And that probably had something to do with the results. I think for 2010, probably the conservatives are going to be looking at this as something, you know, to give them encouragement.
Let's go back to New York's 23rd and on this question of whether a sort of Tea Party GOP might be a winning GOP or not. Tom in Plattsburgh, New York, up in the 23rd. Hi, Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment that we in this district, or at least for myself and most of the people that I'm around, are not used to as much national attention as we got this time. But the advertising was getting quite old. And when it got to the end, I ended up myself casting a protest vote by casting my vote for the
Tom, you're breaking up on us, but you're a Republican. In the end, you didn't vote. You didn't vote for Hoffman. Is that right?
I did not vote for Hoffman. I voted for Scozzafava.
Breaking up there, but too much negative campaigning, Tom says in Plattsburgh. Let's get another from the 23rd, Boonville, New York. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think your speaker from Oklahoma, he has New York 23 figured out wrong. There's basically three types of Republicans here. There's a sort of an elderly Republican. There's a real conservative rural Republican, and then there's the radical right. And when the radical right shows up, people who you wouldn't even know are Democrat come out and vote. And I think there are a lot of people who would have been happy to have Didi Scozzafava win an election without even going to the polls.
So the very sort of far-right lean of Hoffman, you think, may have brought out a stronger Democratic vote than otherwise. Scott, thanks for that. Let me get one more. Galesburg, Illinois. Christian, you're on the air.
Yes, I was going to say, for all of the conversation you've had about New York 23, Nancy Pelosi has one more Democrat in her house than she did yesterday. And I attribute that to the split in the Republican Party. More specifically, the insistence of the far right of the Republican Party to purify to get rid of individuals who don't agree with their point of view. In short, kick them out of the big tent. I can't see that that's a winning strategy for either conservatives and the Republican Party, and I certainly don't think it bodes well for 2010 for them.
Christian, let us pick it up, and thank you for your call. Tom Edsel, Mick Edwards tips his hat to your analysis here, but you know, do you see this as just more of the same kind of traditional Republican to-ing and fro-ing within a range of politics? They'll be just fine, thank you? Or do you see a real problem in the schism, some have called it even, here in the GOP?
I think in the long run, you got to see it as a real problem. The demographics of the country are changing so dramatically. The percentage of the electorate in a national election that is minority has doubled from 13% to 26% in, I think, roughly 18 years. That's just too big a minority and Democratic-leaning minority vote for the Republicans to continue to conduct appeals that really only appeal to white conservative voters. And there has been, in addition to, this has been a very successful strategy in the South for the Republican Party, and for a while through all the 80s and 90s, it was pretty successful in a large part of the rest of the country. Now it's becoming increasingly an isolated strategy for the South. And there has also been, I mentioned this long history, Clifford Case, who Mickey Edwards referred to, lost to Jeff Bell. But then Jeff Bell lost, I think, to Bill Bradley. So it was a Democratic victory. The Club for Growth, which financed Hoffman in New York 23, gave him $1 million, has often succeeded in nominating candidates who then lost to Democrats in the general in quite Republican-leaning districts, like the Eastern Shore of Maryland, for example, where they Club for Growth beat Wayne Gilchrist. So there are pluses and minuses here. If there is a real negative reaction to Obama, which there has not been yet, it's possible that this conservative strategy would work in 2010 and 2012. But at the moment, we have not seen that kind of wave-like anger emerging as it did in 1994.
Ross Douthat, what's the risk downside for the GOP here if Richard Vigorys, you know, leads the way with the kind of purity test on all candidates going into next year?
Well, I mean, I think Tom's right about the big picture. You know, the demographics of the country are changing. The Republican Party's, the issues that the Republican Party ran on in the 1970s and early 80s, issues like crime, really high marginal tax rates on the middle class and so on, the state of the welfare system, these issues don't resonate in the same way. So the Republican Party doesn't have really good messaging at the moment on health care and so forth. And so if you just run every campaign as if it's 1980, you're not going to win a lot of national elections. You can't run Doug Hoffman for president of the United States and win. That being said, if you look at, you know, NY23 is a very particular case, and it's a case where I think Mickey's point is absolutely right. Didiscos-Fava, always hard to pronounce that name, wasn't just a moderate Republican. She was a liberal Republican. She had positions that were pretty much identical on all kinds of issues to a mainstream Democrat. And so the lesson there is, you know, if you're going to nominate a moderate Republican, nominate a moderate Republican. Don't nominate somebody who's so far to the left that they're inevitably going to inspire this kind of primary challenge. I don't think there's any point for people who want to see a moderate GOP, more moderate GOP, in trying to romanticize the plight of Didiscos-Fava. She was not only, and not, I mean, in addition to being too liberal to be the Republican nominee in that district, she was a terrible candidate. She ran a terrible campaign. She did things like calling the cops on a reporter from the Weekly Standard who asked her too many tough questions. I mean, there were a lot of factors that went into Doug Hoffman's rise in that district, and it wasn't just a case of moderates getting purged from the party.
Rise and ultimately fall. Mickey, Dick Armey said the effort in the New York's 23rd was the tip of the spear. So what does the outcome tell you, Mickey? And can a Tea Party GOP do well next year? Is it time for that? Is it just the right thing or a problem?
Well, I mean, if it is what Dick Armey said or what Richard Vigorys said, I, you know, then the Republican Party does have a real problem. I, you know, it's just as Ralph said, the problem was that Didi Scozzapava was too liberal. But if the Republican Party starts knocking off people who on a couple of issues don't pass a litmus test, you know, then they're going to be really out of touch with the country. And, you know, they have to be able to show that they can be more than a party of you know, white Southerners. And so far they haven't done that. And it's okay to have some basic, fundamental, fairly conservative positions. But when you start saying that we don't tolerate people who disagree with us on one or two of the litmus test issues, they're going to fade into irrelevance, and they'll deserve to fade into irrelevance.
Let's stick right here with the 23rd. A lot of callers there. Canton, New York, June. June, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I want to radically disagree with your commentator who was talking about people like Jim Buckley who were elected in New York as conservatives. I got to tell you that Doug Hoffman is no Jim Buckley. And what showed up here in our county, town, city, and villages was the right wing of the radical right. And while this race clearly has national implications, the voters yesterday said it had local consequences. And we were not prepared to have Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Glenn Beck hijack our congressional district.
June, you sound dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. Are you a party player?
I am actually the vice chair of the state Democratic Party, but a proud resident of New York 23, and I am thrilled that Bill Owens is my congressman-elect.
You've got him, and we've got your read. Thank you very much for that. Thank you. Alan in Mooresville, Vermont, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a couple of comments. Up here in the North Country, of course, I saw some of the advertising that was for the 23rd campaign, and I wondered if that had a lot to do with it. I think that Owens was able to tie Doug Hoffman to, I guess, insurance company support. I'm not exactly sure what company it was, but I know that the advertising seemed very effective, and I thought it was curious because it seemed to suggest that, hey, you're going to trust the insurance companies with our health care, and the voters came out, and at least if they were responding to that, said no. So I wondered about the effectiveness of that advertising, and also it's in a district where I think you know, that's hurting economically. Somebody mentioned, of course, the farms issue and the milk farms up there. And so the voters, you know, in a long-time Republican district, coming out and saying, I'm not sure these guys are doing the job here for that. And,
yeah.
And then I had a couple of questions. And then my other comment was I want to remind the voters across the nation that the Obama administration did not create this economic fiasco.
I think Obama's reminded us of that a couple of times, Al.
Yeah. Could there be other factors in the gubernatorial elections that contributed, you know, that are more regional?
Well, absolutely. And we've heard some of those. But let us pick this up, particularly Ross Douthat. You heard June there with the Democratic Party, but straight out of New York's 23rd saying, you know, bring it on. Bring us a right wing of the right wing, and it'll fire Democrats up every time. She's happy to go to battle with that. What do you say, Ross?
Well, I mean, I think that that's actually an echo of what you've heard from the Obama administration. I think the Obama administration has been very happy with the idea that they are in a battle with Rush Limbaugh or a battle with Glenn Beck, and they've expended an awful lot of energy actually trying to brand first Limbaugh, then Beck, then Fox News in general as the face of the Republican Party, because they see that as a battle that they can win. If the Republican Party is defined by, you know, talk radio and Fox News, and the Democratic Party is defined by Barack Obama, then the Democrats win. I think that their calculation is probably right. It doesn't mean, though, that when we get to 2010 and 2012, that dynamic will actually hold. Obama will have been president for 2 years, for 4 years. Mm-hmm. The election will become about him, and the challenge for Republicans will be, you know, basically to repeat what Bob McDonnell was able to do in Virginia rather than what Doug Hoffman wasn't able quite to do in upstate New York.
Mickey Edwards, what advice would you whisper to the Democrats out of this? How do you interpret what happened here, New Jersey, Virginia, and its meaning for the Democrats in the Obama administration?
Well, you know, I don't remember now whether it was Ross or Tom who made this point before, but I think Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi need to do some more whip counts today, because the support for the health care bill probably took a hit yesterday. There are a lot of members of the Democratic caucus, especially in the House, who are moderate and who come from districts where Republicans are strong. And I think that a lot of them are going to be looking at the results, especially in New Jersey and in Virginia, and they're going to say, we better rethink this, because, you know, the Republicans, you know, are reaching a certain kind of appeal to independents that worries us. Because, you know, if the independents do not go back to the Democrats the way they did in the last election, a lot of those people are going to lose their seats. And so, you know, a lot of the Democratic agenda that Pelosi and Reid have been pushing probably took a bit of a hit yesterday.
Well, we're going to have to follow closely and hope to talk with each of you again about how that unfolds. Really interesting day, and very glad for your analysis today. Mickey Edwards, former Republican congressman, author of Reclaiming Conservatism, vice president at the Aspen Institute. Now, Mickey, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Thomas Edsel, political editor at the Huffington Post, author of Building Red America. Tom, great to hear from you.
Good to be with you.
And Ross Douthat, co-author of Grand New Party. Ross, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gail Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby. With help from Suzanne Merkelson and Patrick Rosso, our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.